are listening to the Badass Lady Folk of Brooklyn here on Radio Free Brooklyn, where we interview badass women who are kicking buns, both big and small, throughout the borough. Every episode features an in-depth talk with a female mover and shaker who's deeply invested in the community. Find out how she's doing her part to make Brooklyn a better place to live for old-timers and newcomers alike. I'm your host, Christine Stoddard.
And I'm Maury Pack.
This week, it's our pleasure to welcome Molly Sunsting from the Madcap Factory. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, so happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you.
Molly has a passion for advancing play in everyday life. With a background in music and education, she understands what it means to play. Molly is the founder of Madcap Factory, a production house that designs experiences and products helping grown-ups embrace the absurd. She's created countless projects that encourage grown-ups to live creative and meaningful lives. You can find her doing cartwheels down the street or winking at strangers.
It's true. I do wink a lot.
That's your official bio.
I love me a good bio. So, Molly, you do a ton of awesome projects, but I want to start with Madcap because when I was researching you, to me, that feels like kind of the crux of your creative identity. That's where you are able to manifest a lot of your ideas. So what is Madcap?
So Madcap Factory is essentially the umbrella company that holds all of the weird and wild things that I make. And I have an in-house arm that you know, holds all of the projects that I design with my team. And then there's a client side where I work with larger, either experiential marketing firms or other clients to make their experiences that much more magical and playful. Do you know what the word madcap means?
No.
Tell us.
It's a funny word. It's an old-fashioned word like zany. It means amusingly eccentric, which is really like how I want to be seen.
Creative girl MO.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a really funny word and fun to say and fun to use. It does require some explanation, but I like that part.
Yeah. Why did you choose that word? How did you find it?
I was with my girlfriends on a weekend getaway, and we actually saw a license plate that said Madcap, and my friend and I had been discussing starting a production company, and we had thrown around all these words, and it sounded too much like an agency, and what I do I'm not an agency, I'm a factory of weird and wild ideas, and we saw this word Madcap, and all of us were just like, yes, that's it. We were all sort of familiar with that word, and it just immediately hit. And I sat with it for a while. I thought Madcap Creative, that didn't feel right. That felt too much like an agency as well. So Madcap Factory, it's like just turn out those weird ideas. Keep them going.
So what do you call yourself in the context? Are you like a creative director? Are you a producer?
I'm a producer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why did you choose that instead of director?
Because I do often bring on other people that will sort of direct, you know, an artistic director or a creative director. I make shit happen. I pull together a team. I have a roster of people, venues, vendors, all of, you know, it's what a producer does. I have my budgets and pull things together, and then when the event happens, when the experience happens, I can sort of sit back. Or, you know, I do actually run a show, but it is, I think producer really suits what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah. So tell us about an experience. What is that like for people to experience? Or what's an example of a good one that you've had recently that you enjoyed?
Well, this is one that I worked on with a client. Can I talk about that one?
Yeah, sure.
So I worked on a project where we designed, it was a cocktail party where we delivered cocktails by drone.
So cute.
And this is a collaborator who, you know, brought me onto this project, and he's had this idea for a while, and he's like, all right, how are we going to actually make this happen? And it was so funny and gimmicky, but so wild to, you know, all these suits, you know, walking around this room where we were actually delivering cocktails via drone. We had to, you know, make the 3D landing gear that was affixed to the drone. And, it was so wacky, but beautiful and, you know, wild and people loved it.
How did the suits react to it?
Oh, they loved it.
Did they?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they were, like, waiting for something like that to, like, fall in love with?
I think that it's just, you know, when you're going to a conference cocktail party, it's kind of snoozeville.
Yeah.
And having a little bit something different is enough to you know, have you remember that day. They will never forget that cocktail party or that event.
Yeah.
And maybe that helps them, you know, then with that conference or that client or whatever. I think that's part of why I love playing with absurdity. It's, you remember those moments more than your average day. You know, if you do something different every day, it sort of gives you the sense that you're expanding time.
Mm-hmm.
So I do try to, you know, encourage people to do different things as much as possible. One company I worked for a while was Daybreaker. Are you familiar with Daybreaker?
I am not. No. Can you explain it to me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is something that you guys should look into as newcomers to Brooklyn, relative newcomers. So Daybreaker is an early morning dance party.
Oh, they have that in D.C.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yes. Our yoga teacher, Dorian, goes to those.
Oh, my gosh. That makes me so happy.
So I worked for Daybreaker for just under 2 years as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And every party we did was different. We had a different theme. And, you know, that's Daybreaker is still really growing and is a wonderfully successful company. But producing with them was so magical. Oh, man. I mean, that is a great example of bringing absurdity and magic to everyday lives.
Yeah. So how was your involvement in that different than anything you've done before?
I mean, I guess it was similar in that it was designing experiences.
Yeah.
And oh man, I'm pausing for a second. Oh my god.
Don't worry about it. Like, what made it special? What do you think special about
them? I think what's special about Daybreaker is the ability to build community.
Yeah.
It started here in New York. It's grown to, you know, 13 or 14 cities internationally. And getting to be one of a very few, you know, small team of producers across the world was so remarkable. And to bring 300 to 1,000 people together every other week before work in the morning where there was no substances. We really didn't promote having devices on the floor, you know, phones on the floor. Just pure joy and energy and dancing in the morning. It was so beautiful to see people, you know, making eye contact and making friends with each other, and there was not that sort of aggressive vibe that you experience in a nightclub.
As a woman,
yes,
especially.
Exactly.
Hashtag
yeah. So Daybreaker really helped me grow my own personal network and experience in production, and after working with them, my world sort of blew open and really helped me launch Madcap. So I owe them a lot.
Did you always want to be someone that built communities, or was that something that just, like, happened upon you?
It's a great question. No. So this is a relatively new career for me. I studied music in school, went on to, you know, I wanted to be a famous opera singer. That was my dream as a young person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I studied music. I went to work in music education. That didn't quite feel right. I taught music for a while. I did policy in the music education side. Worked at a music school for many years. But none of that felt really right. So it was only a couple years ago where I realized how absolutely unhappy I was. Mm-hmm. I couldn't distinguish one day from the next, or week, or even year. And I feel like I woke up and missed years of my life.
No.
So I quit sort of in my early 30s without having any idea what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And went on a pretty serious fact-finding mission, which, you know, is scary to do when you're... I wasn't a 22-year-old college grad. I was a grown-up, an adult,
quote-unquote.
Yes.
I have heard that term used.
Yes. I don't like that word. I started saying yes to all sorts of things. I ended up going to this grown-up summer camp that was really amazing, where all we did was play, and I thought, okay, that's how can I bring this element of play back to Brooklyn in a more everyday, sort of small-scale manner, so fashion. So that's kind of where it started. That was a couple of years ago. So now I'm really sort of on my feet and launching all these products, and it's exciting to finally be landed.
Yeah. How do you think your music background informs what you do now?
I think, you know, in a couple of ways, having stage presence is really helpful.
Yeah.
And knowing how to sort of talk to an audience is essential. And we'll talk about some of my projects in a bit, but I do have to often speak to large audiences.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped. It's actually easier for me to speak to a large audience than it is to a couple people in a room.
Like on a podcast.
What a strange coincidence.
It's that level of intimacy, probably.
Yeah, I know. Christine and I are the exact opposite. We're like every time either one of us has to go to a big party, we're like, you're coming with me.
We're like, not doing this alone.
You're coming to this rooftop event.
Yeah, schmoozing? Oh, no problem. I
really?
Can do it.
Oh, so
yeah.
Jealous.
So tell us about all the other projects you have going on, because there's so much.
Yeah, so my most exciting project right now that I love is, and it's kind of my baby, it's called First Time Out. Mm-hmm. And it's a variety show for first-time performers.
Cute.
And yeah, I've been running it for just over 2 years, and it's a really special event.
What is it?
So in exactly what it is, First Time Out kind of says it right there. Mm-hmm. It's a show where people who maybe have never performed before, or maybe they played the violin in high school and they want to bring it back out in front of the audience. or maybe they're like, they're a singer and they want to try stand up. It's a whole mishmash of you know, of performance art. We do get a lot of music, but I am always looking for more sort of avant-garde kinds of performance.
Like jugglers or something?
Jugglers. I love a first-time juggler. Even if it's with scarves, you know, it's great. But it's so special. So it came out of me not wanting to... I studied music, and I lost my interest for performing. I gave up on it. After spending so much time in that field and seeing so many amazing people come through the music school where I worked, I thought, you know, there's no room for me. There's no room for, like, a novice performer. And then...
Just, like, total burnout.
Yeah, exactly. And then a couple years ago, I was sitting in this tiny room in Dingle, Ireland, in the peninsula of Dingle, and... All these people came into the room, and everybody was performing, like, harmonicas, violins, accordions, and it didn't matter if you were terrible or amazing. Everyone was just performing, and I was just like, why do I have this deep fear, this really deep fear? Where did that come from? I want to perform again. There must be other people like me. So I started this show, invited some friends who I thought might want to perform, and got a great turnout, and I thought, oh, this is a thing. I guess I'm going to keep doing it. And now it's, you know, keeps growing and growing. I have a great audience, a great community. I sell out every show. But it's so authentic. Like, there's, even if you screw up, the audience is like, yes, I love you.
Aww.
You're amazing. Yeah.
What are some of your favorite performances you've seen?
Let's see. There was a woman who performed a few shows ago who had never, you know, sometimes people are also there like, I swear I've never performed before. And they've, you know, they have a, like, very extensive history of performance.
Oh, it's very easy to Google.
Like, yeah, right, exactly.
I've never performed before.
Professional headshots.
Yes, exactly. My next show is, you know, coming up next week. So I had this woman perform who had never performed. She played guitar. She did this, I think it was a Jenny Lewis song, and she sounded, oh my god, she was amazing. She totally blew my mind. She sounded just like Joni Mitchell. It was tears. Wow. She was really remarkable. I think that the ones that really, my favorite acts are the ones that you can see that you can see their nerves,
yeah.
and know that it's, you know, there's something really coming out of them. I also love seeing performers that then go on to have more shows after first time out. Like, this, it's a stepping stone, you know? It can be. And it's not an open mic. Very intentionally not an open mic.
Yeah, I noticed on your website you made a delineation between, like, an open mic or a salon. Why? What is the purpose of that?
So I find open mics to be incredibly competitive. And I don't want this to be that. I want it to be a variety show. Mm-hmm. A variety show that really promotes authenticity and encouragement. And so far, I think we've done a really good job in doing that. And, you know, I've had the same house band with me since the very beginning, and we really try to cultivate a warm, super supportive, rah-rah environment.
Yeah. That's so important in the U.S. I mean, what you were saying about Ireland, that little place in Ireland, makes so much sense, because in many other countries, there's not that hyper-competitive capitalist drive. It's just, like, be with your family, be with your friends, make something, whether it's music or whatever, make piñatas, make I'm just thinking about, like, my mom's side of the family. It was just, everybody get together, make something.
Yeah, exactly. Do a thing. Just get out there and do it. Thing
and have fun and be happy, celebrate, whatever. It's not about who's the best by these strict standards and making this much money and selling this and blah, blah, blah. No.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't have to be your full-on thing, like open mics, like, I'm gonna, you know, one up you. It's just, yeah, get up there, do a thing, go home, you know, get an applause, go home, or, you know, do it again, or not. Doesn't matter. Just do it. It's great. We're gonna love you.
Is the vibe of these things, is it more serious, or is it comedy, or is it a pretty good, like, to me, just the way I'm thinking about this is I feel like you would get this smattering of, like this Joni Mitchell woman, like, just, like, intense, heartfelt, like, so nervous to just, like, bare your soul, and then, like, some lady's first time doing stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, how does that translate between all of those acts?
That's a great question. It's very lighthearted.
Okay.
I keep it very lighthearted. As the host, I speak in between each act, and I really love telling terrible jokes. Really, really dumb one-liners. I wanted to buy stupidjokes.com, but unfortunately, later, if you want, ask me about domains. It's a good story for you. But it's intentionally lighthearted to set the tone of, you know, ease and warmth. Sometimes, yeah, we have really intense acts, and I try to in advance know which ones are going to be intense, so it's not going to be like something super heavy and then ridiculous stand-up that might be, you know, crass right after that.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, but it's definitely much more lighthearted than like very serious.
I think that probably makes people more comfortable. You see a lot of things in Brooklyn that are like they try to make fun of serious things. Like, I'm thinking of I went to a bad home movies thing, but it was supposed to be like home movies that were too serious and that's why they were funny, and like that's a very awkward place to be in, because like you don't really know anyone, but you're supposed to be laughing at their pain and like you don't really have the intimacy yet. So I always think that like to have sort of a lighthearted MC that can guide the audience through that is super crucial, and like public space displays like that.
Yeah And it's also, you know, when I first started this show, I did have some acts that I didn't really vet.
So,
I learned my lesson very quickly. You know, having stand-up that I didn't ask what they were going to speak on first.
Ooh.
And stand-up is... And this is a very accepting, empathetic, you know...
Yeah.
Diverse show. And we want to... We promote acceptance and love. And we won't... We, you know, we do not stand for any, like...
Racist jokes.
Exactly, thank you.
Precisely.
Here. Sexist stuff. Like,
duh, obviously.
Yeah.
But not obvious. So,
that's a good to some thing people. To learn.
Right, exactly.
Wait, so how do you vet those people now? Like, do you just ask ahead of time? Or do you like, hey, so like this is like a like feminist space or a queer positive space or like an anti-racist space?
Yeah, like how far
in advance? I don't use that much. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just how far in advance do you choose people, curate everything, figure out who they are, what their deal is?
So, couple things in those questions.
There were many questions.
Yeah, I have a waiting list, but I'm always, you know, I'm always looking for more performers. always looking for more performers. Dun, 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 dun. The first thing I look for is, you know, I want to make sure every show has variety.
It's a variety show. Yeah, it must.
Precisely. I sort of get a sense from them. There's a questionnaire when they first sign up. And then I do give them language of, you know, this is an authentic show. We're very positive. It's a warm environment. I don't go so specific in saying that it's queer positive.
You don't use the buzzwords?
I don't.
Don't be an asshole.
You know what I find? It's just in the way that I curate. I can put that stamp on that, this is the kind of show that I produce, without being explicit, and that's just the way that I've chosen to go about doing that. There are people in my community that have asked me to be more explicit in how in my marketing and even when I'm at the show, and that's something that I could choose to do right now. It's not the way that it's just in my, I'm fully supportive of, let's see, what do I want to go about saying this?
Do you want to use all the buzzwords?
You can get, yes.
We can get, you just want to be nice to everybody.
I was about to say, I wonder if it's like a generational thing, because, first of all, listeners, excellent face on this one. You've aged beautifully.
Oh, God, Mar.
Because I wanted to say, you're older than Christine and I.
Yeah.
And so, like, for our generation, those buzzwords are really important, and they're the way we delineate, like, okayness within spaces. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering if you're a little bit older than us, that maybe just you didn't come of age in those spaces where these buzzwords are really important. So for you...
With all the Tumblr warriors.
Yeah, like, so for you, the way that you think about safe space is probably just different than Christine and I do, or some of our listeners who are our age do.
That's fascinating. That could be. It's something that's it's always top of mind for me, you know, wanting to be as diverse as possible and as accepting in every way. It's top of mind in how I curate and providing that safe space for audience and performers alike. But yeah, using language is just not something that I do. I'm not opposed to it. I just don't. I don't know how to say that more. I'm not opposed to it. I think maybe it's not knowing and not wanting to then say the wrong thing.
That's a totally legitimate fear, especially within, like, liberal or progressive spaces. I think that there is a big fear around miscommunicating your intentions for openness.
Yeah.
Christine, you've written a little bit about this, too.
Yeah, like I was about to say, when you and I, Mari and I went to Stonewall, and we saw the drag queen performer, Lady Bunny, and she's a baby boomer, and right before she did all of her dancing and singing, she did more stand-up than anything else, and one of her little bits was about how she didn't understand why all the young things were using all these words, all these different terms for the gay, lesbian, the LGBTQ, A, whatever letters I'm missing, community. She just thought, like, when I was growing up, it was enough to say that you were gay. It was enough. And she just thought that defining everything to death in some ways just drove people.
Yeah, because it creates this sense of, like, who has the purest ideology. It's not just, like, let's be nice to each other and, like, try to be as uncrappy to one another as possible. It's, like, who has the purest language to describe the appropriate experience. Yeah.
And her point was just, don't be a dick. Yeah. Like, I don't care what word ever. You use. No,
I don't want to be a dick, and I don't want to, you know, be exclusionary in any way. So, but I'm always open to education, and maybe you guys can, you know, give that to me.
I'm learning.
Tell me what buzzwords that I should always be using. So, or if there's, you know, if there's anything to put, you know, on certain websites that show what kind of, I'd be definitely open to that. So Anyway.
Yeah, no. We could talk about that forever. Talk about words and language and how sometimes, yeah, words help, but words can sometimes hurt and just be extra confusing, too. Yeah.
So I'm interested in this, like, pressure to succeed that you're talking about here and that I also read about when I was reading up on First Time Out. So where do you think this, like, pressure to succeed comes from? Is it societal? Is it, like, personal?
Just in general?
Yeah, like, well, because you're trying to create this space where people don't have to succeed. And that, just the idea that there would be a space made to not succeed is very absurdist, and it's sad that it's absurdist, but what kind of pressures are you pushing up against?
Yeah, that's, I love that. And I want to start this question, this answer by saying, oftentimes after a show, I'll talk to a friend and they'll say, oh, well, this one was my favorite, they were the best. And which one did you like best? I'm like, no, stop, absolutely not. I can't do that. I mean, you also asked me, like, who my favorites are, and this woman stood out because her authenticity was so amazing, but I can't have favorites in the show. There can't be a best. People can walk away, sure, with their favorites, but it's very rare that we have the ability to not try to one up one another and this pressure to succeed. I think absolutely it's societal. As you know, I studied music and I worked at this music school where it was just, you were graded on your talent.
A letter grade or a number?
Traditional grading systems.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had to take it's called a jury at the end of a semester where you go up to a panel and you perform what you've prepared and you get a letter grade at the end of it. And it's same with, you know, art schools and things like that.
Yeah.
Any kind of artistic higher education or any kind of education, and you're put a letter grade to that is, oh God, I find it kind of atrocious. And higher ed in general is a bit archaic and could be revamped. But society for sure puts pressure on us to succeed, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I know that it's something too, like, women competing with one another as well. And, like, that's something we definitely like to discuss in, like, third wave feminism. And, like, how do all of us succeed without, like, competing with one another? Not just competing, but, like, for the attentions of men, like, for the attentions of, but also, like, society in general and patriarchy through the lens of men.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a totally radical act of, like, to unsucceed or to, like, as a woman especially, to be, like, because we have to succeed at such a higher level than men do in order to succeed at all. Like, I'm thinking about, what's that Shonda Rhimes show, Scandal, where Kerry Washington's character, because she's black and is a woman, has this really famous line where she's talking to her father and she's like, I have to succeed twice as well as anyone else to get half as far. And as women, we're conditioned to, like, okay, if you want to succeed, you got to do it twice as good as anyone else does. And to be a woman in a space where it is unsucceeding, but, like, that is part of the community building, is totally revolutionary to me.
Yeah. I love it.
You're like, I'm a revolutionary.
I can take a nap now.
Made it.
All right, so what else do you have going on? You have Madcap, you have First Time Out.
I want to talk about Inconspicuous Games, because when I was looking through Madcap, that was the one that jumped out on me, in part because you got a really good, like, cross-sectional smattering of, like, New Yorkers at these events and of Brooklynites, and I feel like in all of the, like, all the community building we've seen this season, something that keeps coming back is this desire to really, like, show Brooklyn for what it is and, like, all of its, like, diversity and different types of people. But it's really hard to reach out to lots of different communities to do that. But this program seems to have done that really naturally. Like, just in looking at the pictures I've seen of it, like, how do you get lots of different types of people to just, like, all come on board?
I love that you looked at Inconspicuous Games. So Inconspicuous Games is where we play field games like Capture the Flag or Hide and Seek in large landmarks, like the Metropolitan Museum or Grand Central.
Right? So good.
We did play a game on the Staten Island Ferry, which was wild.
Oh, wow.
But it's all inconspicuous. We're hidden. Do you know Capture the Flag?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a, like a game where you run a lot.
Yeah.
Game, field game. So imagine playing that.
A lot of like fakes and stuff.
Yes, playing that at the Met.
Museum. I love that. That's so smart. So
you can't run. You know, you can't get caught by the security guards. The rules are really specific. You can't have like jerseys on to determine what team you're on. So everybody wears a little jewel by their eye. It's either a red jewel or a blue jewel. Mm-hmm. And most people that come don't know each other. So it's another little added element of who's on my team. I don't know.
Right.
So that's what Inconspicuous Games is. So I think I have a large audience for that, or, you know, a diverse audience because of a couple things. One, you're playing games that most people know how to play.
Ooh, so that's a really
it appeals
point.
To grown-ups and young people, younger. Mm-hmm. I have had some younger children play, which is so awesome. That's I want cute. More kids to come to these. So everybody knows how to play these games. You're playing it in beautiful landmarks for the most part, or like spaces that you know about New York, but you don't necessarily go spend time there.
And spaces that belong to everyone.
Right. So those are two things. It's like sort of educational because you get to be in these spaces and you get to like tour around a little bit. What else? Why else? I mean, and it's just straight up fun. You're playing a prank. Sort of.
You were playing a prank. Yeah. You're playing a prank on everyone who's watching.
Yes, and on these institutions themselves. Mm. Because we don't get permission to play the game.
So where do you announce the games?
I have a mailing list that I send it out to. I also use social media.
Carefully, so the Met doesn't see.
Yeah, exactly. We're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
I have thought, like, can we do this? But we're not doing anything that's against any rules. If it's a ticketed venue, we will purchase tickets for it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's the Met requires you to purchase tickets, so it's not
so
like
be it, you shall.
Right, exactly. But it's a really easy way for individuals to connect. And what's amazing about it, so like I said, most people don't know each other at the beginning, and we always include a time for gathering afterwards, whether it's, you know, on the roof of the Met or a restaurant nearby or a picnic in the park. We always build that in and encourage people to come afterwards, and you're immediately bonded. You know, it's the group dynamics that form during the game when you don't know each other, and you can't be aggressive like in a normal game of Capture the Flag. Mm-hmm. And so you have to rely on sort of being kind and not being a dick. and it's remarkable how quickly people are able to drop in and just be pals in a park where it's, you know, if you're going to a friend's birthday or any sort of occasion where you don't, or you're going to a rooftop and you don't know anyone, like, it's hard to just go up and start talking to people.
It is. It's weird. People don't like to say that, but it's weird.
It is weird. But this builds in a way for you to just vibe out. It's great.
How long have you been doing the games?
I started this in May of last year.
Oh, you've done like a bunch of them. You've done like four or five.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't. I'd like to. I want to do more.
Yeah.
Right now, I have a few other things that are really percolating. So this one is one that I do want to dedicate time to, but it's not the front runner at the moment. I'd love to eventually, you know, like offer this to businesses as a way of, like,
that's
a team
great. Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Oh man, my dad was like a headhunter for a company, and he always did stuff like that, and like he was always trying to like find ways to like put games, and like it's so funny how like putting games into a work setting just like blow, like people are not prepared for it.
Yeah.
But it like draws these things out of people. Like, so like, why do you think it's important for adults to relearn play? Because that seems to be the crux of what a lot of what you're doing.
Exactly. So children have this ability to, you know, play is ingrained. It's just something that they do very easily. they don't care about time as much. You know, there's not this commitment. There's getting missing a lunch or a deadline, and also pure imagination. I think those are things that we tend to lose as we become grown-ups. I also try to avoid using the word adult. You may find that in any of my marketing or language. Adult seems so, like, only adults say adult. So I try to use the word grown-up whenever possible because I think it's just much more fun. So I think grown-ups, why is it important for grown-ups to relearn this skill? Is that the question?
Yeah.
I think taking ourselves a lot less seriously is just going to allow us to make better connections and better community. It's a way to live with kindness. I also think having a more creative life makes everything better. And I know it's is something that I think about a lot, actually, is especially in the time that we're in, you know, with the new administration. It's like, is the work that I'm doing a luxury? Is play a luxury? And I really don't want it to be a luxury. I don't think it has to be. And I think, like, is beauty a luxury? No, I don't. I choose to believe it isn't a luxury. I think beauty, meaning, you know, beauty in all things, beauty in nature, whatever. But play also is a. I think it's a necessary human right. And when you have your basic needs met, you have shelter and you have food. What's the third? What's the third?
Oh, like Maslow's hierarchy.
Yes.
It's like shelter, food, and then you start getting into, like, I feel like love is pretty early on Maslow's hierarchy needs, but I don't know.
Self-actualization is the top one. That's all yes. I remember, like,
yeah, well, I think
things animals need, right. And then...
Yes. What you're saying is, like, so, like, I think we would maybe, in our culture, more naturally delineate love with, like, fun with, like, and play with, like, self-actualization. It's, like, something at the top, but you're saying it's something at the bottom. It's something that is ingrained.
I think so. I mean, it's not... I don't have a real theory on this.
Or I'm going to steal this idea and write an academic paper.
Yes, do it, please. You can quote me.
professional my website.
Yes, yes. Professional play expert.
Yes, exactly. But I think it's what allows us to communicate and really connect in a beautiful way where we can see each other, you know, especially, like, for example, Daybreaker. Mm-hmm. There's no alcohol, there's no substances, there's no devices, really. And with that, you could really see each other, and it just allowed for this immediate connection. So I think play allows for that.
Yeah, and during this administration, during the next 4 years, we also need to continue having fun and loving our friends and family and doing normal everyday things on top of volunteering, on top of activism, writing letters, mm-hmm. making those phone calls. And it is good to de-stress. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think sometimes, especially since the election, I know Maureen and I have talked about this, just
burnout.
Yeah, we've burned out. We've been in situations where we start to feel guilty. Like, why am I not at that rally?
Yeah,
how come I didn't go to that postcard party?
We were at, like, a, like, Planned Parenthood, like, rally, and, like, feeling bad because we weren't at the refugee rally. Like, we just got to this point where, like, we have to, like, plan the weekend. Like, we'll do the refugee rally tomorrow, but we're doing, like, the Planned Parenthood rally tonight. And it just got to this point where, like, we had to be like, no, we have to do this for 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, we have to back off.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can just sit in bed and binge watch Gossip Girls and eat ice cream, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah. True.
Or you can go play these games.
Yes. But I also think these rallies and protests, there is a part, there's community in that.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think it's okay to feel good about what you're doing and the mm-hmm. fact that you're there, and you can make them fun. You can have fun at a rally.
Oh, yeah, are so creative. Yeah, and the cheers and the yes. chants and the songs.
It's very serious, yes, and it's really important work right now. And my husband and I are talking about, you know, on Saturdays we march. Like, that's the new thing. All right, mm-hmm. every Saturday, what's the thing? What, mm-hmm. you know, what are the... Where do we go? Get your go bag of snacks that we can, you know, give to people. But making it, you can still make it about play in a fun with your own network.
I'm really hoping that that's something that happens. What was the last rally I went to last weekend? I think it was the refugee rally. I think they're all
2 weekends.
That was 2 weekends. Ago,
oh, right? Did you miss a weekend, Mari?
For shame. No, but I remember one of the things thinking like at the rally is I was like, I wish there was someone that was in charge of planning these so that, because like kids, like moms with like kids were there. And, like, you can't have a kid in a rally for 90 minutes. You just can't.
Certainly not, like, 4 hours.
No, and so, like, at a certain point during the rally, I was like, you guys can't have, like, 9 speakers and then expect people to walk. Like, I wish there was someone who was in charge of making these rallies, which are so necessary and important, even just for showing up on the news. Yeah. It's like, look at how many people are at these rallies. Like, I wish there was a way... I wish there was someone like you who could like go to these rallies and be like, okay, I'm gonna direct this and like make this about community and fun, and like we were doing it and it's hard, but it doesn't, there's something about like pulling the weight of the seriousness of what you are doing on your back every day that is so demoralizing.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the ways that rallies could be made more fun now?
Oh man, I wanna definitely think on this.
You can send us an email and we'll
yeah, no, it's an excellent question. I think your point of having multiple speakers, it can be really, really draining, and mm-hmm. it's important to hear voices. Yes.
Can we play like Capture the Flag in the middle of it?
Well, there could be some like secret mission or something where you're, I don't know. Ooh. I wanna think on this. This could be really fun. And do it in a way that's not like scary.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening? You know, we don't want to set off any alarms or anything.
Yeah, no stampede or anything.
Right.
Yeah, but I think there's definitely a way to do that.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's what activism needs right now, is a certain element of unserious play that, like, it's like you were saying before, like, play is not a luxury, and when we make it into a luxury, we force our activists to carry the weight of the movement on their backs in a way that is not sustainable.
Yeah. And does it have to be so painful to do this?
Yeah. That's true. Because, like, how are we going to do that? Are we just going to be sad for 4 years? Are we just going to be serious and upset? Like, or can we...
Trump hasn't even been the president for a month. And we're all exhausted.
We are. Like, how... Like, we can't... That's what I'm saying, is, like, we can't do that. And I think that... this reinforces your earlier point that play cannot be a luxury. Mm-hmm. Like, it has to be something that we force into our everyday lives and that we embrace the absurd, because otherwise we just don't have any sustainability in our movements.
Right.
Well, on that note, with no transition whatsoever, what is Cave Day?
No, I'm so interested in Cave Day. Like, when I saw that was a thing, I was like, Christine, we should do Cave Day.
I love that. Well done.
It was really, really obvious. Artful.
Yeah, Christine's been working in media for 7 years now.
I write so many articles.
Okay, so Cave Day is a weekend day that is intended for the, you know, the weekend warriors, the side hustlers, the passion project people. It's a day dedicated for you to work head down on whatever it is you want to work on with, you know, like-minded people. It's a lightly facilitated day, so that means there are two different ways you can enter the cave. You can do sort of the timed cave or the free flow cave. So in the timed cave, we do work sprints. Do you know the Pomodoro technique?
No, what is that?
So the Pomodoro technique is where you work in sprints. So you work like 30 minutes on or 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off. 25 minutes on, 5 minutes off. Mm-hmm. And we do something similar to that, but we do like 30 minutes on, a minute off for stretching, 40 minutes on. So you're just head down working. There's no talking with other cave dwellers. We call attendees cave dwellers. We really go into it. We really dive into the cave deep. But it's really hard when you're a side hustler and you have all these different passion projects and there's no time and family commitments and, or, you know, whatever kind of community commitments, whatever it is, your work, your life, rallies. Mm-hmm. Hello. But we still need to do the work that makes us happy, our Moonlight projects. So this is a day to just be around those kinds of people. We provide all of the food and beverages and a great space, and then we hang out afterwards, and that's it.
Wow.
But it's amazing. So it's like 50 people come, and this is a new venture that I just started with two collaborators. And so we've only had one cave day so far, but it was an incredible success, and we're really excited to see how far we can take this. So we're now sort of building the model and seeing, you know, what this will actually look like. But it's about 50 people that attend. We have some volunteers that help staff it. There are people that are working on screenplays, college applications, writing a book, food blogs, whatever it is their passion is. Or it could be their regular job, or cleaning their inbox. It doesn't really matter. Really, you know, whatever.
I'll never clean my inbox. None of you can make me. It's going to fester and die with me.
Oh, you God. Should go to Cave Day.
I want to go to Cave Day. Well,
yourself to it.
Right. Well, what I want to know is, like, so how is this different than me getting work done in my room? Is it that I'm surrounded by other people and we all have this commitment? I see that you provide snacks, which is very important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's working from home, working from a cafe. There's so many distractions.
Yes.
And whatever your poison is, whether it be, you know, your bed to take a delicious nap, or if it's Facebook, or, you know, having to post, whatever it is that you get distracted by, you're with a ton of other people who you're kind of holding yourself accountable to them, not like just that. Yourself. So. Yeah. Oh, this guy over here is doing something.
He's been typing for 45
exactly.
minutes.
I'm not gonna take a break and look at that article until, you know, until we have a real break. And it's more encouraging to be around the same people doing the same thing. Plus, it's just a great way to see what other people are working on.
Yeah.
And we did not intend it to be a way to build community. And the three of us that build it. That are doing Cave Day we're community architects in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we do think about that a lot, but Cave Day was really meant for the individual. And we were surprised at how much people were really interested in developing more of a community there and getting access to each other after the event. So yes, it is a way to meet new people. It's not meant to be networky, but we're just there to support you getting shit done.
How do you juggle all of these projects?
I need more cave days. Seriously.
Well, so is one of them, is Madcap your job?
So
or
Madcap is the umbrella. So everything I do is funneled through Madcap. So all of these projects we've talked about, plus any of the client work that I do. So I do freelance work that pays money. A lot of these I would love for, you know, we're looking for sponsors for some of these things, so eventually I would like to make
people.
Yes, hello. The in-house projects I would love to eventually be the full-time stuff, but for now I take on freelance work. But I have three criteria that I follow for anything that I take on, whether it be a passion project or a client work. It has to meet two of three.
Okay.
Would you like to hear them?
Yes.
No, I'm not going to tell you. So it has to meet two of three. It has to have a paycheck, a reasonable paycheck, yes. Pennies.
That's so crucial. Like, and yes. That's hard for artists to, like, demand money for their services.
Me.
But, like, you got to pay artists.
Yes, I've worked enough in this field now as a play producer that I've made a place now. It's time for me to make money from it.
Yeah,
totally.
It has to be boundary-breaking or absurd or weird or wacky in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And or it has to have heart or meaning.
Aww. Yeah. Aww,
so first time out, for example, not making money yet, but it is really weird and fun and has heart. The drone project wasn't really meaningful, but it paid nicely and
totally.
Was totally wacky.
Yeah.
So when I take on projects, those are the things that I consider.
I think that's really smart, and I feel like lots of artists can use that in the way that they delineate projects, especially freelancers, because as a freelancer, you often have to juggle, like, what pays the bills and, like, what do I actually want to be doing with my time. And I think that having sort of a loose system like that where you can move around, that gives your, you know, like, your artistic soul some leverage.
Yeah.
And, like, not only doing things that are soul-crushing, but not feeling guilty for taking the passion projects on, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I need more sleep. Yeah. I am an excellent napper. I try to take a nap almost every day. Like, a short, you know, 10 to 20-minute nap.
Oh, that's smart. I took a 3-hour nap yesterday during the snow day.
That's nice.
I was like...
Is that a nap, though?
No, like, that was...
Or is that a sleep cycle?
No, that was the fear. It's like, I did all my work for my, like, regular day job that I was working from home, and then me and my boyfriend are like, let's just take a nap. We woke up at 7:30, and he's like, I have so much amount of drool in my beard. And I was like,
yummy.
Yeah, you can't... Yeah, you gotta be, like, you gotta delineate your naps, because otherwise they take over your life.
Yeah, I've become an expert at power naps.
So when is the next cave day?
The next cave day is March 26th.
Okay.
It's coming up, and it's in the city. It's in Manhattan.
Disgusting. Shame.
But it's okay because we get the space for free. It's at a place called Impact Hub in Tribeca.
I know.
Yeah.
I'd say.
It's caveday.org. So all of the tickets are up there. It's, I mean, there's a ticket price for this, but it's, there's a lot that you get from it. Mm-hmm. The facilitation and really delicious snacks from our wonderful sponsors. And
so how do you exactly facilitate? So when I was reading up on it, it looked like if I'm going and I'm like going to work on my poetry collection, then I need to edit it and I'm really stuck on something. Like, can I go to you and, like, talk to you about it?
So there are a couple things. First of all, we all gather very quickly, 3 times during the day, in the morning, right after mm-hmm. lunch, and at the end of the day. And we announce what we're working on and a percentage between from 1 to 100 and how far you are on your project.
Cool.
And then you're essentially set free to do your work. We've given you enough sort of information in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Tips and tricks, some resources you can use if you are, you know, that you're going to get stuck. We recommend you bring a journal, and we also have resources in the break room and games and toys and colored pencils and crayons and things to help you, you know, if you really just can't get unstuck.
Right.
Also in the morning, the 3 facilitators and I, my co-facilitators and I are available for just discussion, general conversation, to try to help you with whatever we all have experience in facilitation and workplace, you know, this kind of, you know, how we spend our time. We've spent a lot of our own time in this work.
Hmm.
And then we have actual coaches that come in the afternoon and that you can sign up for in advance. So people that have worked in this space and have, you know, real credentials. Not that I don't have a real credential, but, like, actual credentials in
they got a stamp.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they've got it embossed on their paper, so they can come in and help if you're really needing that facilitation, that coaching.
So it's a life coach or what?
No, they're like business coaches.
Okay.
I mean, again, we've only done this once, and the 2 people that we brought in, started the design gym, and that I forget exactly what the design gym does, but they're really helpful in helping people get unstuck.
Yeah. I was just thinking my dad would love this. Like, I know I've mentioned my dad twice in this podcast. I know that is a high percentage.
Hey, Mars dad.
Hey,
hope you're listening.
We love dads.
Yeah. No, well, he just retired recently, and he's, like, looking, and, like, my dad can be retired for, like, all of 6 months before he's like, all right, that was a nice little retiring I had.
Back to work.
And, like, our dog died recently. So, like, for a while, he'd be like, well, I'm going to walk the dog. And, like, but now he's just like, I'm like, what did you do today? He's like, mountain biked. And, like, when I went back home recently, I was like, so, like, what's the plan now? He's like, I'm going to get a job again. I'm like, okay. But, like, he, like, loves stuff like that.
Like that
he,
pension, right?
That's what my mom's for. My dad, their marriage, they plan that shit out. My dad's like, I'm going to make all the money up front, but you're going to work for the government and make the pension. Yeah, and that's how we're going to collaborate. No, they were... If anyone, you know, how like the whole like thing about adults where I'm like, I'm never
grown ups.
No, okay, so no, I will ever, that's what I mean, is like I will only ever be a I'm grown up, but like my parents are hard stop adults. They have like mutual funds and like IRAs.
Okay,
like,
but once you reach like 50 or 60, then I think you're allowed to be an adult.
If you have if you have an IRA, I think you're allowed. That's the delineation to me between. I'm still on my dad's family plan for my cell phone bill.
Me too!
Are you really? Yes.
Oh, God. So,
what a relief. Like, all of us. That's always my, thing in my head. Is like, once I get my own cell phone bill, like, then I will have made it and I will have done something. But, like, until...
Both of us are married and we're on our parents' plan.
Yes, my brothers, my older brothers are not somehow.
Oh, why?
I know. Disowned.
Oh, keep...
Because you're the baby.
I
maybe.
Know. And the only girl. Oh my God.
No, take that where you can get it.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left. So, what else do you have coming up? What are some important dates?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
websites?
Man. Yes. Oh, there's so many things. first time out, the next show, March 15th.
March 15th.
March 15th in the city. Oh! Sorry.
That's okay.
In the city at
Shame,
always looking for new performers. And everything can be found on madcapfactory.com.
Okay.
But the most exciting little product that I'm launching, that I just launched, that I'm really stoked about, is called Smalls at S'mores.
Ooh.
And it's a tiny s'more kit.
Stop it.
I should have brought you one.
Oh my gosh.
It's everything you need to make tiny s'mores. So it's mini marshmallows, chocolate chunks, little mini grams, a candle, matches, roasting stick.
And you just want to so do it with a little candle?
It's really
That's
sweet.
That's a great little date thing.
It's a perfect date. We're selling tomorrow at the Artist and Fleas.
Oh, yeah. That is tomorrow.
And then so when our listeners listen to this, it will be 2 p.m. February 11th. So how long does the...
You got until 7 p.m.
Okay, so guys, when you listen to this, you still have a few more hours to go. Where is it?
Yeah, I was gonna say, where's the Brooklyn Flea in winter?
North 7th. So it's not the Brooklyn Flea. It's called Artist and Fleas, which is a year-long flea market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's North 7th and something in Williamsburg.
Okay.
But it's, it's a...
easy to Google.
Love and food.
Christine, I would go with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to a funeral.
Oh, right.
Oh. Fun. Oh.
Well, I'll get
on that note, thanks. I'm really good with these transitions, guys. Molly, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
So you've been listening to the Badass Lady Folk of Brooklyn on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you'd like to donate to the show, you can find us on the Radio Free Brooklyn website. Just click on the little sponsor the show icon at the bottom of our page. I'm your host, Mari Pack.
And I am Christine Stoddard. You have been listening to our conversation with Molly Sonsing. Tune in next week for more interviews with the women changing Brooklyn.